Hi, Trailblazers. This is Jeremy LaDuke, and I wanted to let you know about a book I just wrote called Climb, The Risks and Rewards of Elevating Your Brand. It is a nuts and bolts marketing trail guide to help any local business owner find their way through a dense marketing forest. But it's not just a lot of technical marketing jargon. It follows the story of a Main Street bookshop owner as she works to revitalize her family business. And you get to see some practical, everyday ways these tactics can be used. If you'd like more info or to get your copy, please visit theclimb.guide or search for Climb by Jeremy LaDuke wherever you get your books. And now, on to the show. Thanks for tuning in to the Marketing Trailblazers, Fireside Chats with Mountain Conquering CMOs. I'm Jeremy LaDuke.
Hi, I'm Jess.
And we're excited to have a new person during the intro in the studio with us today. Welcome to intern Lauren.
Howdy. It's quite a treat to be in the podcast that I will later be editing.
She usually works like behind the scenes, like making Jess and I sound as good as possible. But now she gets to be on the podcast. We're just like, hey, you have jokes. Maybe you can make the intro even better. So thanks, Lauren, for coming on and helping us.
Well, shucks. Thank you.
No, it's a tough job.
Somebody's got to do it.
So today, our theme for today is road tripping, right? And our guest, we'll lead into that in just a second, but our guest today is bringing back the road trip brand of America. But before we get there, what was y'all's experience with road trips as a kid? Did y'all go on any?
I mean, pretty basic stuff. We'd pile in the minivan, go to the beach, whatever.
Yeah.
Pretty low key.
Yeah, how big's your? Do you have brothers and sisters or something?
I have one older sister, so yeah. It's just the
Did
two
like,
of us.
Did you bite a lot on the
no.
in the minivan?
No.
No.
Okay. Thankfully,
we're 5 years apart, so I mean,
okay.
Our interests, I don't know, didn't really overlap too much. I mean, I'm sure I was plenty annoying at times being the younger sibling, but. Nothing too major. Pretty low-key road trips.
We had a station wagon and four kids. And so, like, the two older kids got to sit in the actual seats. And me and my sister, who was about 4 years older than me, but we were always, like, the young ones. We got, like, thrown in the back, which would be illegal today. But, you know, we just rode. It was like riding in the back of a truck, essentially. But you just had, you know, glass around you.
That sounds like fun.
It was so much fun because
that would be my preferred seat.
Yeah, you had like this flat area, and you could just play. You know, have your G.I. Joes or your Barbies or
Do you ever get
games.
Carsick though?
No,
being like kind of all over the place.
I don't think so. Maybe.
Okay.
I mean, I kind of remember throwing up on one of those, but I don't know if it was carsick or just sick.
It's hard to tell
when you're 5 years old.
But I mean, if it didn't. Happen like every time, I'd say it probably wasn't car sickness necessarily. That's usually a pretty consistent.
I don't remember it being a common thing. My parents might disagree, but yeah, I don't think it was car sick. What about you, Lauren? Road trips as a kid?
Yeah, it was pretty much like a big family trip to go to Massachusetts or New Jersey. And so it's like a good 14 hours. And I don't have any siblings, so it's just like me chilling in the back. And my dad is like good at, I guess you could say, inventing things. So sometimes he would just like Velcro those little DVD players onto the back of the car. It was great, and I would just pack a whole briefcase full of DVDs, so it was pretty chill. It was a good time.
Yeah,
we are seeing a generational divide here.
I know, right?
Sorry, guys,
we had board games in the illegal back seat, and you had DVDs. No, that's fun. Did y'all play the road games? Like, did you do the alphabet on?
Oh, yeah, occasionally.
Like, yeah. That was like I still make the kids do it whenever we have to go on any trip of any distance. Like, if we have to, like, go to, like, Chattanooga or something, I'm like, all right, A to Z on the signs.
It's a hard game. We would also do, like, the license plate game where you're trying to see as many states as possible. Yeah. I mean, I feel like in the South, you don't see too many different ones.
You know, we got a lot of people from Ohio and Michigan, like, coming our way for whatever reason.
A lot of Illinois, too.
Huh? Yeah?
Yeah.
I know a lot of people from Chicago that have moved here. Yeah.
It's wild.
So a 14-hour road trip. That's a hefty one. Where'd you guys go, Jess?
We did a lot of beach trips because my parents love the beach. We did do a long one to California one summer when I was like 8.
That's a road trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I blocked most of it out.
I would have been worn out. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
We did see the meteor site, though. I think Arizona?
Oh, wait. Yeah?
Is that where it is?
Like,
there's a giant crater in the ground.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, it was a hole in the ground.
It's about as cathartic as seeing like a giant hole at the beach, like somebody randomly dug, and you're like, oh, that's cool. And then you walk away.
Wait, you're not comparing a meteor crate to a sand hole at the beach?
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah. That's the same level of enthusiasm and interest.
Like, think about how, like, when you're a kid, like how incredible you're like, these two random kids that I'm never going to see again just like dug this trench in the middle of this beach. And you're like, this is sick. But there's nothing else you can do about it except admire it.
I've always, like, whenever we've been at the beach and my kids have dug those giant holes, I'm always worried that like some small child's going to fall in it. Yeah. That's what goes through my head.
It would be a fun place to take a nap. I would think. It'd be a shady spot.
I feel like this has gone a bit awry.
Road trips.
Oh, yeah. Tell me, Jess, did you hear about the Little Debbie joint that got opened up? That place looks really fun. Are the rides shaped like the cakes? Or
I don't think it's a ride park. I think it's just a park with statues.
Aww.
Wait, what? There's a Little Debbie park?
In Chattanooga, there is a park, and there are giant statues of, like, Little Debbie treats. Like, you can look. I don't think
so
you
random.
Do anything else other than look at these statues.
Deborah's
it's like
legacy
an installation.
Lives on, Jeremy.
Yeah.
I was like, that feels so, like, classic.
They're big Deborah cakes.
That feels, like,
they're
so classic American road trip.
Yeah,
like,
I've never gone, though. I want to.
And kind of outlandish.
Yeah.
Is it, like, can you climb on them?
I don't think you're supposed to. It's like more like an art installation kind of thing. You just look at giant fake Little Debbie cakes with like cosmic brownies and zebra cakes and stuff.
The cosmic brownie is a piece of art.
I think that's kind of it. I mean,
yeah,
you
it's
gotta
a national
get that
treasure.
Ratio
it's
right.
A national treasure. Yeah.
I mean, it fed the childhood of America for
right?
a long time.
I mean
Swiss
fed rolls.
The obesity epidemic. It's a landmark, really.
It's a monument to our nation's history.
I mean, if any country is going to have a park with statues of prepackaged processed desserts, it's going to be America.
Sign me up.
And in the South specifically.
Is there a gift shop?
I haven't been. I don't know.
It's just a grocery store.
My interpretation was it's just like a park that you like a park, and there's statues of the treats.
Oh, look! There's a little Christmas tree.
Aww,
look at that.
That's awesome.
Is
I want to hang out with
park?
The cosmic brownie.
Oh, Debbie might look a little scary.
Was that Debbie? Was that a real life?
I'm Debbie.
Oh,
Deborah's seen a lot. It's she's.
It's a shame we're not filming this one because both your faces were just, oh.
Well, just
like excited to see it and then immediate disappointment when you saw it.
So I've been super excited about having our next guest on for a long time. And I was fanboying a little bit because I've been following her on LinkedIn for a while. And I just reached out and said, hey, would you want to come be on the podcast? And to give you a little background. Stephanie Stuckey is our guest today, and she is now the head of the Stuckey's brand. And so the reason we're talking about road trips is the Stuckey's convenience stores back in the day were kind of a landmark across the South, especially like on Route 66, I believe, and some of the other major thoroughfares. You could go, you know, you could drive through and see a Stuckey's store pretty frequently. But it didn't start as a store. It started as her grandfather was a pecan salesman, and he started candying and making different pecan treats. And so she's brought the brand back as a candy and a pecan brand. And they've got tons of like really good snacks and treats that you can still find all along the interstate at these convenience stores, and you can get them on their website. But anyways, she's also had a pretty dynamic past. She's been a state rep for Georgia for 14 years, a lawyer, worked for the city of Atlanta, now she is working on really reviving this brand and doing a lot of it from a grassroots sort of standpoint. And so super excited about sharing this interview with her. Jess, what do you think about the whole story and everything?
I think it's cool. I think I've said it on the podcast before, but most of my background is not actually in marketing. So I think it's really cool when we can talk to somebody who's doing cool things in marketing who also did not come from marketing.
And she's got a shared, I think, passion for sustainability as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah, so yeah, that, which is huge. Really cool. Because we need this planet sucks right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for the Little Debbie part.
Except for the Little Debbie. It's going strong. Little Debbie's going to save us all. It'll at least make us happy as
the world burns.
The world burns and the ice caps melt and sea levels rise. We'll have Little Debbie in Chattanooga.
It's just like the safety circle around it.
Yep.
They could destroy it.
I mean, it's so kind of like Stonehenge because you can't get close to Stonehenge. They're going to protect the Little Debbie Park one day.
So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's get this fire blazing with Stephanie Stuckey. Stephanie, thank you for joining us on the Marketing Trailblazers.
It's my pleasure. I'm excited to be here.
The one thing I really want to ask you starting off is please tell me that pecans have a lot of nutritional value compared to other nuts and whatnot, because I want some good excuse to eat the candies that you guys have.
Okay, that was a bit of a loaded question. Pecans are among the healthiest nut. I don't want to bash our nut brothers and sisters, but the data speaks for itself. There's lots of science and reports that have come out even in the past couple of months that are showing that pecans have the highest levels of antioxidants and the good fats and magnesium and all sorts of healthy vitamins and minerals are also sustainably produced. It's the only snack nut that is naturally grown in our country. It's indigenous to North America. So there's a lot of great things to say about pecans. If you eat our pecans raw, it is extremely healthy. And you can buy our raw pecan snacks online and you can use them in baking. If you add sugar to them, they're a sweet indulgence when you want to treat yourself. And it's part of a well-balanced diet. And I always like to stress that mental health is part of overall health and well-being. And for me, that occasional treat that's really good quality is part of my mental health well-being. So indulge.
You had me at antioxidants.
Yes.
I just need some excuse to eat pecans with the chocolate. It's like oatmeal cookies, right? Oatmeal is fibrous.
100%.
It's good for you.
They have raisins in them. They have oatmeal.
Exactly.
All sorts of healthy stuff. And I really look at the ingredient panel on everything I eat. And you'll look and see that we have the highest quality ingredients. We do have some very limited preservatives to make sure that we've got the shelf life that retailers need so that the product stays fresh. But we also work really hard to make sure that we're keeping our product fresh in more natural ways, like having really good packaging that seals right and using a nitrate flush that gets the oxygen out of the packaging so it'll last longer. So read the packaging, read the ingredients. That stuff really matters. And we make our product so fresh, and it's pecan that we source direct from Georgia farmers. There's a great story there.
Yeah, for those who don't know the history of Stuckey's, you all got your start with pecans. Your grandfather. Tell us about that history.
That's right. We started as a roadside pecan stand in 1937 during the Great Depression. My grandfather was looking for a job, and he did what a lot of entrepreneurs do. If you can't find a job, you create a job. And you create a job that's filling a need. And the need he saw was that people traveling, back then especially, there really wasn't a reliable place to pull over. He started just with that stand that sold pecans because it happened to be a bumper crop year for pecans. Pecans have alternating good and bad crops. So it was a bountiful harvest. And he started selling the pecans, and he quickly realized that people pulling over needed more than a bag of delicious pecans. They would often say, well, where can we get gas? And where's a clean restroom? And so the light bulb above his head popped on, and he said, oh, I can do that. It took him a couple of years to get the capital, but within a few years, he had the first Stuckey's. And then a few years after that, he started getting a chain. And Stuckey's was really the first roadside retail chain. Before there was TA or Love's or Wawa or Bucky's, there was Stuckey's, and he built it at its peak to almost 400 stores in the 1970s. He sold the company, and it was out of our family hands for decades. And 4 years ago, I had the unexpected opportunity to purchase the company. It was for sale, and we are slowly reviving it.
That's awesome. And I'd say anybody that's in the southern part of the United States has seen Stuckey signs before, and probably been to a gas station. And you all are not only reviving the brand through the candy and the pecans, but you're really bringing back kind of this road trip lifestyle.
That's right. It's part of our brand story.
Yeah, because you all originally, as the store, it was a part of the American road trip.
We grew with the road trip. When my grandfather first started, there was no interstate. The interstate highway first started being built in 1956 under President Eisenhower after World War II. So when we started, Stuckey's was on the Dixie Highway that ran through the South initially, but we expanded to the Jefferson Highway, the Lincoln Highway, Route 66. And when the interstate came along, my grandfather picked up and moved his stores to the interstate. And we really were the first convenience store chain that you would find on the interstate. And he had a billboard company. He had 4,000 billboards in 40 states. We were on every major highway in the country. And we were synonymous with road trip. So many people to this day tell me that as a kid, it wasn't a road trip unless you pulled over at Stuckey's for gas and pecan log rolls and fun souvenirs like Dunkin' Birds and whoopee cushions and yes and no games and all the fun stuff that people remember about our brand. So we to this day carry that brand history and story with us. So even though I'm reviving it as a snack and candy brand, and there are only 12 of those stores left, I wish there were more, but that's the company I bought. I had to face reality that those stores, sadly, had largely been shuttered under outside ownership and mismanagement. So those stores are still part of our brand, but there's only 12 of them. So we talk about the road trip all the time, and that's who we are. That's how we roll.
What is your favorite road trip memory as a kid?
Probably when I was 10 years old, we did a family vacation to Florida. And my dad was in Congress. So we grew up in Washington, D.C. And we drove down I-95. So it was a long haul to get down to Florida. And I remember we did this vacation where my parents had no agenda, no itinerary, no reservations. We just went to Florida and we pulled over wherever we wanted to go. And there are 5 kids in my family. So you can imagine all of us screaming, pull over here, pull over here. But we did Weeki Wachee and Gatorland this place called Six Gun Territory that's right next to Silver Spring Park in Ocala, Florida. We stayed at Hojo's and did all just the kitschy, classic Americana roadside attractions. And Florida, yeah. Florida and California are really, I think, the two meccas if you are into road tripping. So what a glorious time in the 1970s. I still remember all the fun places. The Citrus
Tower.
Did
you all have a station wagon?
Pardon?
Were y'all in a station wagon?
Absolutely. And I was in the way back. Me and my baby brother, we're kids number 4 and 5. So we didn't even bother trying to get shotgun.
Right.
Give that up.
you had the best seats in the house because you could sit back there and play board games.
Oh, we had our own country back there. We even made currency. I mean, we were seceding from the Union of the station wagon, had our own little existence. We built a fort with pillows and had the puppy back there. So it was our own little fiefdom in the way back.
Yes.
The blessed, wonderful, magical place called the way back.
When you're 4 feet or shorter, that is the best seat in the house.
Yeah, and my
dad become a teenager,
reach his hand back far enough to swat at us when we misbehaved. So it actually turned out to be the best seat. And then we could roll, we'd get the window rolled down and we'd stick our arms out and pump at all the truckers. It was fun. We loved it.
So now that you have the Stuckey's name again, how do you combine, your childhood cherished memories like that with your extensive background of other fields from politics and being a lawyer and everything? How do those merge for your new vision for Stuckey's and your plan and strategy and everything?
I think life's career journey really helps inform all the different detours you may take. And I started as an attorney. I actually was a criminal defense attorney for my first 10 years of practicing. I worked in the state prison system, and then I was a public defender trying cases. And I transitioned from doing that to being a state representative for 14 years and got very active in environmental issues during that time period because I served on the Natural Resources Committee. When I left the legislature, I focused on environmental law and ran an environmental law nonprofit and transitioned to being head of sustainability for the city of Atlanta and working as an adjunct professor of law at University of Georgia. And throughout all those various career trajectories, there are some consistent currents that have remained with me in every career and especially now at Stuckey's. And I think two of the most important are the ability to give a voice to the minority viewpoint or the people that don't always get recognized. Certainly as a public defender, I was representing people who didn't have a lot of resources. And as a state representative, I was always advocating for people who didn't usually have a voice at the General Assembly. That was my passion. And in the environment, it's really hard sometimes. These cases that we would try, it would be the riverkeeper or the community association that we represented against large corporate polluters. It's very interesting now that I'm in the corporate world. I occasionally come in contact with other people I used to sue, and I'm on their side now as a corporate. I was a CEO, now I'm a chair, but it gives you an interesting perspective. But I learned to advocate for the underdog. And the other thing I learned is how to make a pitch and how to present in politics and also trying cases. I had to stand in front of people all the time and argue for a case that wasn't always an easy one and had to be really creative sometimes in the presentations I did in order to get people to go my way and persuade them. So I do that every day with Stuckey's. We're a comeback brand. They're decades when our company really wasn't at the forefront of consumers' choices when they were going shopping or when they were taking a road trip because the brand declined. So I have to get out there and argue for the underdog, which is Stuckey's, and present and pitch to potential donors, to potential new accounts, to customers, try to get them to buy our brand. So all those skills have been invaluable in my new life.
Yeah, I love that because, like, on paper, it's so drastically different, but I love when there's hidden overlaps.
And honestly, I would never have done such a career pivot in my 50s had it not been my family's company. I mean, if somebody, I mean, first of all, nobody would have even approached me about buying a company. I had zero experience running or owning a business, but I had the last name, and the folks who were selling were approaching everyone with the last name Stuckey. And it was impossible to get a loan. Nobody would loan me money or capital because the company was six figures in the red. And there wasn't really a sound strategy initially to revive it. So I had to sink my entire life savings. Everything, but I did not touch my pension fund. I did keep that. So far, that is protected. But everything, like, zeroed out pretty much everything except very basic living expenses in my checking account. So it's been a journey. It's been a sacrifice, but one of passion and love.
Well, my sister's a public defender, and so I've seen the behind-the-scenes work of what you've had to do. And so I'll just say thank you for the time and the blood, sweat, and energy I know that you had put into that. But it is exciting to see you carrying that level of empathy and compassion, as well as the sustainability perspective, into the corporate world. Because when you think about it, you're touching the lives of how many people does Stuckey's employ right now?
75.
Yeah,
which doesn't seem like a lot, but I'm excited about that. And when I bought the company, it was less than 10.
Yeah,
3 years ago.
Well, I mean, when you think about that, and the families that are connected to those 75 people, you're impacting hundreds of lives every day. And in a lot of ways, you came into an existing business, but you're still having to hustle and put in the blood, sweat, and tears that entrepreneurs do when they're starting, because, like you said, you're restarting this brand and reviving it. On the marketing side, talk to us about that. How have you marketed this revival?
There are certain themes that I touch upon, and there was a lot of strategy behind putting together what is our brand story. It was definitely a team effort. I know I do a lot of the actual outward facing of what people see of the Stuckey's story on social media and on podcasts like this one. But there's a team effort. Most notably, I have two business partners who are co-owners of Stuckey's. One of them is R.G. Lamar, who's the CEO, and I'm the chair. And the other is a man named Ted Wright, who runs a marketing firm. And the company is called Fizz Marketing. And I read his book, and I loved his book, and reached out to him. And it's all about word-of-mouth marketing and do-it-yourself marketing. So everything that I do is a lot of hustle and a lot of hard work. And it's trying to get other people to have honest conversations with their friends and colleagues about our brand. That's how we want to grow the brand. That is the most effective form of marketing that has been around for thousands of years, back to Egyptian markets where people would talk about where you can get the best vase or whatever, go over to that tent and find the best vase at the market, to today, listening to a friend tell you this latest Apple product is the best ever and you have to try it. That's going to be 100 times more effective than seeing any sort of ad. So we're constantly trying to spark conversation. And in order to spark conversation, you have to tell stories. That's what really sticks. And we got together and decided what we were going to talk about. And we talk about comebacks. We talk about entrepreneurship. We talk about pecans. Great story there. We talk about the road trip. And we talk about small town America and making stuff ourselves. So those themes you'll see throughout, and I may come up with 365 different things to talk about throughout the year, But if you really analyze what I'm posting, it's 100% coming down to just a few core themes. It's just our variations on the theme and the message that we want people to know about our brand.
Yeah, I feel like finding that balance between nostalgia and being innovative at the same time is probably a little challenging.
It is.
But it's also trendy. Yeah.
Well, I embrace that we're a nostalgic brand because that's who we are. That's authentic.
Yeah.
And instead of running from it, I recognize it is very much a part of what our brand is. And nostalgia is comfort.
Mm-hmm.
Nostalgia is a safe haven. Nostalgia is friendliness and warmth. So all of those attributes are so important. The challenge for us is that we're a brand that's been around for almost 90 years, but we had a big gap where, frankly, the marketing and communications and sales weren't where they needed to be. So there's about 30 years there where people weren't thinking about our brand. And so we may be nostalgic to people who are in their 50s or 60s, but less so for people in their 30s, right? So it's complicated sometimes. I do talk about nostalgia, but I'm also very mindful that there are a lot of consumers out there who don't have those warm memories of road tripping. And it's not just Stuckey's, it's the road trip. The road trip declined for quite a while. It's making a comeback, but it declined for a while. So while we're also talking about the brand history, we do talk about what we're doing today so newer generations can connect with our brand. And I also try to come up with nostalgia that's not just Gen X, which is my generation, because we're the smallest generation. So I've got to recognize there's a whole bunch of millennials and Gen Zers out there, and I need to appeal to them. So I do my best to have posts that also resonate with a younger generation and draws upon cultural themes that they're going to connect with.
Do you see that strategy changing as you grow? Let's say, you know, fast forward 5 years, Stuckey's is in, you know, all the major grocery stores, all that sort of stuff. Do you see that marketing strategy changing?
I think if we get a bigger budget, you might just see more of what we're doing on a grander scale. But I think our brand essence is going to be our brand essence. I don't really see a lot of the themes that we talk about going away. We're always going to be associated with the road trip. I actually think it'll be more so. I'm excited as we expand our production. I would love for us to be in more RV parks and campgrounds. Mm. And be, one of the things I really want to do as we expand is have more opportunities where I can just meet one-on-one with consumers that connect with our brand. So I want to go to car meets. I want to go to Route 66 conventions. I want to be where the people who are in our space, right, who like sweets and snacks, who like healthy pecans and nuts for baking, who like to road trip, I want to be where they are and give opportunities for them to taste our brand, to hear me talk about our brand and share stories. So you're just going to see more of what we're doing. I don't see it dramatically being altered, just maybe some of the strategies, but the core messaging isn't going to change. It's just we'll have more capacity to reach more people with the core messaging.
I love that commitment to your vision. That's encouraging to hear. I follow you on LinkedIn. I can't remember. I found you a couple of years ago just by chance, I think. But you, I know from following you on there that you've got a huge following, and you're doing a lot to revive the brand through LinkedIn. But you're also on TikTok. Correct?
Wow.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how you, as your own, become in a real sense you've become an influencer on these platforms. How do you manage that with all the other tasks that you have to do for your role?
It's been hard. It's getting maybe somewhat, I'm not sure, but easier because it's always a challenge with the workload that our team is dealing with, but it's more strategic, especially in recent months, because as we've built a team, I'm able to delegate more. And so I'm actually doing less than what I was doing this time last year, and less of other tasks and more of the outward facing. So I've been freed up to focus more on what I do best. And then our other team members have been stepping up and doing what they do best. So I'm doing less of the day-to-day sales and more of just the pitches for new accounts. I'm working trade shows. I'm doing more of the outward facing aspect of the business. And I'm doing a lot more speaking engagements. That is completely ramping up. In fact, I was just looking at my schedule. The next 3 weeks, I've got at least 2 speeches a week, all involving travel. So that part is ramping up. But it's exciting. It's a way to get our story in front of new audiences, or reminding us, you know, reminding people who've heard of our brand but have a sort of whatever happened to approach to our brand. So it gives us an opportunity to say, we're making a comeback. We're here. We're back. And every event I do, part of my speaking fee is that they have to have Stuckey's product at the event. So it's an opportunity to introduce new consumers to what we're doing now.
That's smart. And that's a innovative way of building your customer base and your loyalty.
Yeah, it happened quite organically. I just started getting speaking requests and didn't even know that you could get money for it. And it depends on the event. Obviously, if it's a Rotary Club, they're not going to have a big budget. But as we grow and as the demands for my time grow, I am able to get pretty decent honorariums for my speaking gigs. And I'm happy to negotiate the honorarium being, in a large part, you're going to purchase our product. And that's a win-win as far as I'm concerned, because they get product for snacks and swag boxes and, you know, desserts at their events. A lot of times they'll put the pecan log roll at the place at a meal, and it's your dessert. So they get that, and they get a speech, and I'm not necessarily asking for a check. I'm asking help promote this, help get our product out there. When I do get a check, the fun thing is that money is going to support our, what we call the culture club, and help improve our employee, the lives and quality of the experience of working for Stuckey's. So we do food truck Fridays and have special occasions and parties. And so that the honorariums help support that fund, which has been a really nice perk of this new strategy that we're really focusing on speaking gigs. And then I've got a book coming out, so there'll be speaking engagements around the book release.
Is there a timeline for the book release?
It's April 2nd. It was supposed to come out April 1st, but I thought, I don't want to do an April Fool's Day. Thought that might not be a good sign.
that's exciting. Can people pre-order it?
They can. I'm not really promoting it till January, just because I'm concerned if I get out there and say, buy our book, people are going to expect it by Christmas. It's sort of the Christmas gifting season, so I don't want to get lost in that shuffle. But it is available now if you want to go on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Bookshop. I like bookshop.org or bookshop.com, sorry, because that supports local independent bookstores. Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's online.
All right. So to all the listeners, go to bookshop.com, but you will not get it until April. We'll put that disclaimer on there.
Won't get
You're
it
not getting
April.
It for Christmas. Well, that's
and it's
exciting.
It's called Unstuck. But if you just put my name in, it'll come up.
Fantastic.
How excited are you to see the Stuckey name on something else, something new, with it being a book?
You mean the book or the products that we're making?
The book.
It's terrifying. Yeah. Have either of y'all written a book?
No.
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 Yeah. Well, some of the listeners probably, I'm sure there are listeners who have, and it's a unique experience, and I'm still not completely done with the process. It's at the publishers. The edits are over. I cannot change anything at this point. So they're formatting and typesetting. And so it's now in the publisher's hands. But it's pretty terrifying because a book is, this is a very personal book. This is my story. And it's also my grandfather's story. And I alternate chapters telling his story and then my story and how I learned from him and reviving his brand. And it's extremely personal. And there's some vulnerable moments. So it's a little nerve-wracking to think how it might be perceived, how people might respond to it. Will they read it and just kind of roll their eyes and not be interested? Or will they relate to it? I don't know. It's putting yourself out there in a very real way. It reminds me of running for office. I remember the first time I put a mailer together and it went out to 10,000 homes and said, vote for Steffi Stuckey, and had my picture on it. And the day it hit people's mailboxes, I remember just laying in bed and not wanting to get out of bed. I was so scared. You're putting yourself out there.
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing that. I'm looking forward to reading it. And it sounds like it's going to be somewhat autobiographical.
Oh yeah.
Will there be some, like, is it businessy at all?
Yes.
Or is it more stories?
Yes.
Okay.
Stories, okay. Business. I definitely have business lessons in there, but I did not want to write a business book per se. I think in part, this is not just me being insecure. It's me being honest. I don't have a career as a business person. I don't have an MBA. I don't consider myself this great business guru. I think my superpower in building Stuckey's to the point that we've gotten, and we've gone from 2 to 14 million in sales over the past few years, so we're seeing some success. But my superpower has been my ability to get talented people at the table. And it was the same thing my father and my grandfather did. So I saw it from others, how they were able to surround themselves with really smart people who fill in their gaps. And then I don't espouse wholly to, my father used to say, get really good people on your team and then get the hell out of their way.
Right.
I don't necessarily agree with that, because I think it needs to be interactive. And I think you also need to have a structure and have a support and make sure everyone's sort of checking each other. But you do largely delegate, and you don't totally second guess the people who are on your team. You give them a lot of latitude, and you trust them, and you know that they can do a good job, and you give them room to fail and use failure as an opportunity to come back stronger and to learn.
The book's called Unstuck.
Yeah, there's a subtitle, and I'm racking my brain to remember it because my publisher was like, you have to have a subtitle. And I think it's, oh, I know, Rebirth of an American Icon.
Nice. Okay, yeah.
And
that's,
it's
a good
got
subtitle.
A Woody station wagon on the cover.
Fantastic.
It's avocado green. I love it. And it's driving up a highway.
That's great.
It's fun. Yeah, I have a whole chapter on the road trip. Just the road trip writ large. I mean, I share some of my personal memories, but it's all about shared experiences. So I don't want this just to be this, here's my life story, you know, and it does not go in chronological order, like I was born and blah, blah, blah. No, it's all storytelling. So hopefully that is something that will be engaging to people.
Awesome. Well, what advice do you have for folks that might be in a similar position as you, that are either trying to get something off the ground or trying to revive something that they've inherited in some form or fashion? From the marketing side, what can you tell them? What can you encourage them to do?
I would say first and foremost, and I'm thinking of this from an entrepreneurial standpoint, because that's very much what Stuckey's is. We're an entrepreneurial company. I like to think of ourselves as an 87-year-old startup. And
I like
being
that.
An entrepreneur at times can be very isolating and lonely. And I think the most important thing is to know that you're not alone. There's a lot of us out there who are figuring things out, and there are no stupid mistakes as long as you learn from them. And just putting yourself out there and being vulnerable is a key part of growing your brand and learning from others and learning from the community. So I'm constantly looking on TikTok and looking on LinkedIn and absorbing content from others who I admire and respect, and I wouldn't say steal, but definitely be inspired by them, right? And I look to people like Seth Godin and Gary Vee. I love their content, and they have lots of advice. So there's all this free advice. I think about my grandfather who started Stuckey's with no outside resources, and he figured out how to market. He was a natural marketeer. Marketer.
Marketer, yeah.
I need more coffee. He was a natural marketer. Yeah. And it doesn't come as naturally to everyone. And look at all the resources out there. Get on YouTube and watch a couple of videos on how to make a TikTok. And then just do it and experiment and see what gains traction. The other thing I would say is don't get fixated. I don't know why I'm not speaking very well today. Don't get fixated on the number of followers or likes. Look more to strategic engagement. Who is your audience? Who do you want to connect with your brand? Do you want, like for us, we want people who love to road trip. We want people who love pecans and people who like to bake, people who like to snack, right? Which is just about everyone. But you sort of think about who, or LinkedIn, I'm looking for retailers that can sell our product. So I have a very specific target on LinkedIn for a lot of my posts. I'm trying to appeal to people who have stores that sell nut snacks. Mm. That's who I want to appeal to. Mm-hmm. So if I do a post and it only gets 10 engagements, but it's the 10 right people who want to have a conversation with me, not just post a thumbs up, but post a comment or ask a question, and then I respond and have a dialogue, that's what I'm going for. Because those are the people who are going to start to have a relationship with us and then want to sell our product. That's how the scrappy, smaller brands can hopefully stake their claim on the shelves and the grocery aisles of America by getting the attention of the buyers for TA, for Loves, for Quick Trip, for your grocery stores, for your Harris Teeter and your Publix and your Kroger. I want those buyers to pay attention to our brand and give us a shot.
One of the themes I'm hearing in a lot of your comments are you've been looking for the opportunities as much as possible, whether it's a speaking engagement or strategic engagement on social media. That radar is always on of how do I grow the business through this?
That's right.
Is that a good, yeah?
Yeah, although I'm very mindful. I try not to be too salesy. It's a sure. tough balance. And sometimes I worry that I'm being too salesy, but sometimes you just have to sell.
It's business.
Yeah.
It's part of business.
And those posts don't always get the most engagement. For example, I'm trying to get more corporate gifts. It's really hard. I'm out there saying, we've got great corporate gifts, and I'll get like one comment. And then I post about road tripping on Route 66, and I'll get 2,000 engagements. You know, it'll be something exponentially larger. And so I get it. It's a daily slog, and you cannot get overwhelmed by a specific point in time where things don't seem to be 100% where you want them to be. You look at the trend. So I'm very mindful. What's the trend? Are we trending in the right direction? Then, okay, we're good. Keep going.
Well, those of our audience that do want to buy some Stuckey's snacks or candy, but might not know where to get them, they can go on your website, Stuckey's.com.
Yes.
And you have the location finder on there. So it'll tell you where to get what, correct?
Yes. And I'll tell you the easiest, because that location finder is very hard to manage. And we're working on updating it because we're constantly getting our product in new stores. So we land a new chain. And then to add all of their locations, for example, we're in Travel Centers of America, and they've got hundreds of locations all over the country. So to upload that data onto our website when we have very limited resources is sometimes hard. And the other thing is we have hundreds of small specialty retail accounts, and those are constantly adding. And so to keep up with that is really difficult. I would say the best thing is to follow me on social media because I talk about our new accounts. I also have pinned to my LinkedIn profile. The first pin is a post that has the logos for all the chain stores that carry our product.
Fantastic.
So that's a good resource. And also just message me. Message me on any social media platform. I will respond. I will personally see it, or you can fill out the contact form on the website and say, I want this message to go to Stephanie, and our Wendy, who reviews those, will make sure I see that. So I'm pretty approachable, and say, hey, I live in Bozeman, Montana. Where can I get your product?
Awesome. Well, I might hit you up after this to find where I can get the gophers, because I haven't seen those in the stores near us, but I want to try some. They look delicious.
Where are you based?
Right outside of Knoxville.
You have, do you have Food Lion in Ingalls?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, they just carry Food Lion up here. All right, okay. We got to talk. You can definitely get them on the website, stuckeys.com.
Fantastic. Yeah, I was talking about ordering a box for the office on there, so I might do that.
Yeah, they are delicious. That is my absolute favorite thing that we make, and now is a really good time to order them because it's winter, and if you order them in the summer, you have to pay extra for cold pack shipping because it's real chocolate and it will melt.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So this is cold weather, best time to order our chocolate. It's going to come in great shape. In the summer, don't order it on a Friday. Well, we don't ship out chocolate on Fridays because then it might sit at a distribution house somewhere in the UPS headquarters, whatever, in the back of a truck. So we really try to make sure that it gets there not melted and gooey.
Is there a limit to how far you can ship?
We ship in anywhere in the U.S.
Okay. Awesome.
And one of these days we'll be in Europe and Canada. I'm working on it. It's a journey.
Well, we wish you the best of luck that journey. It's exciting to see it so far. We appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast with us, and we'll be looking forward to the book soon.
Thank you, Jeremy and Jess. It was my pleasure, and let's stay in touch.
Definitely. Take care.
Thanks.
Marketing Trailblazers with Jeremy LeDuc and Jess Tackett is produced by me, Lance Pettiford, co-produced by Kaylee Eastep, graphic and web design by Will Lunsford, and guest support provided by Kaylee Swaggerty. Marketing Trailblazers is a production of Epic 9 Marketing Outfitters, helping ambitious brands grow since 2014. If you are a CMO looking to conquer some mountains, or you need a CMO to help get you to the top, then contact Epic 9 and get started with a Basecamp consultation at epic9.com. Want more great content to help fuel your marketing adventures? Sign up for exclusive content and get early access to our Marketing Mountain School content at marketingtrailblazers.com.